Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of, hold on, I gotta buff this scratch out, DK Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad, reminding you that if you want to be fancy, skip the leftovers and have some deja food. Welcome to the movie segment. We're brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today. With great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic, whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or you're just weird, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the posted paid envelope for a new one, or keep it forever. Pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now. Right now. We'll wait. Now, using the link at geekkpodcast.com. Now we'll wait. No, we won't. Justin, you're up.
Hey. Here they come, walking down the street. They get the funniest looks from everyone they meet. Hey, it's the monkeys!
Pilot Party! Pilot Party!
Pilot Party!
Damn it. Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. And why only the first episode? Well, see, I've been reading this book about anti-gravity, and I just can't put it down.
I got it.
Yeah.
Not going to dignify it with a chortle, but I get it.
I'll give it a smile.
Oh, thank you, Nigel. Thank you.
See, that was funnier than the joke.
Go take care of the bat. What are you doing here?
No, Bruce!
So, what do you get when you cross Sailor Moon with Strawberry Shortcake, the cartoon, and the Cooking Channel?
A good time.
Rainbow Bright.
Ooh, Rainbow Bright. Yeah, yeah.
Lovely Locks.
Real Lady Marmalade.
Gem and the Holograms.
Kiri Kiri Precure a la Mode.
Okay. I wasn't going to get that.
There's no way I'm able to write that down.
We would have made it an infinite number of monkeys.
Yeah.
It was the blurst of times.
So, Ishika is running home with ingredients to bake a cake for her mother's return. Meanwhile, in the background, a hill explodes. Now, when I say hill, picture a hill in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now make it more phallic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In which direction?
Straight up.
Gotcha.
Very rounded and...
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Looks like a middle finger.
Yeah, and when I say exploded, I mean from the top of the hill...
Right, right.
...comes... Well, it's effectively sweet cream. It is whipped cream. It is confectionery stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it covers the entire town.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
Right.
Gets everywhere.
And everybody is... Huh. That's weird. And they never speak of it again. Anyway.
Nor would I.
Mm-mm.
I
mean, boo.
Yeah.
Cocky.
Good night, everybody. So, Ishika is trying desperately to remake her mother's famous strawberry shortcake recipe. And no matter what she does, it just doesn't work. It doesn't rise. She's gone through like six batches and it just doesn't rise.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, come to find out, that explosion from that hill was from a fairy battle inside of it. See, there are good fairies and there are bad fairies. And the good fairies are trying to protect the Kirikiru, which is basically the stuff inside of baked goods that make them taste delicious.
Okay.
The bad fairies are trying to take them because it makes them stronger. So, as Ashika is trying to make this cake again, a little sheep fairy flies in. Pecoron.
Right.
Yeah. And they have this touching little moment of, ah, what are you? Oh, you're fine. Oh, you're making a cake. It looks great. Pecoron can see the Kirikiru in the mixture and she is whipping the hell out of it. Ashika is whipping the hell out of it. No, stop. You're letting all the goodness out. She slows down, and the cake rises. Enter, oh, what is his name? Gummy. He's one of the bad fairies. This cake is just so full of Kirikiru that he has to have it. And a la Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, he goes from Pokemon to big monster. They flee with the cake, because, you know, reasons. Gummy turns into a third form, because, you know, got to throw a little bit of DBZ in there.
Sure.
Ashika is about to give over the cake, but then she realizes, no, this cake holds my feelings. The cake creates a force field, so she has time to decorate it. She decorates it, and the cake turns into basically this tiny little cake figurine and a makeup compact, but not for makeup, for cooking supplies, which, when combined, turns her into Pretty Cure Sweet Cream. I'm sorry, Cure Whip. Pretty Cure Cure Whip.
Okay.
Via Sailor Moon. And using the power of love and confection, defeats Gummy. Yeah. Oh, also, over the show, just before the show's ending credits, they give you the recipe for the cake. Like, they have live-action person making the ingredients and whatever.
I'd watch that part.
Yeah. I have never seen so much pink in all my damn life.
Okay.
This was a thing that I watched.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being anime, you know, over-dramatization of little things that go wrong, things blown out of proportions.
Mm-hmm.
It was a thing that I watched.
Mm-hmm.
Not for my predictions.
Right.
Ashika seeks out the other Pretty Cures shown in the opening and ending credits. So you know there's going to be more of them. Because in the end, they do a funny little dance. They battle their way through the other evil fairies leading up to the biggest bat of them all. Diabetes. Unfortunately, their powers of sweetness only make the Big D stronger. Regrouping, they change the source of their powers to vegetables. It's not nearly as fun and kind of bland. I give it 6 out of 10 somethings because I lost steam when trying to write this review.
You whipped it too hard.
Yes, I
can't help but think that we should cancel his Crunchyroll subscription.
I mean, on one hand, these are things that we never would have found on our own.
I mean, this is true.
Yeah.
And that is unique.
But on the other end, we had to listen to it.
Well, not just us. Now everyone has had to listen to it.
No, they can have a fast forward button.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will try to do better.
No, you're
good. It's not you.
Yeah.
It's the show.
Yeah. But I'm paid up for the full year, so.
It's not you. It's the content.
All right. Well, thank you, Justin.
Oh, you're welcome.
So there are a lot of shows out there that live in the moments of TV land, memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life. Some are relegated to the dustbins of history. This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asked, should we review it? Is good then, the original is just as good now. Reboot, the idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it, what are these characters doing after a couple of decades of growth and development? Or refuse it. Thank you for getting the hell out of here. September 13th, 1992. End of the Road by Boys to Men was on top, and the Cowboys beat the Giants 34-28. And on that terrible disappointment, we changed our channels to find some cartoons, and were met with the wizard Merlin telling us that King Arthur and his knights have been trapped in the Cave of Glass by the evil enchantress Queen Morgana. Merlin's powers are needed to protect Camelot, but when Queen Guinevere is kidnapped, he knows that something else must be done. So Merlin searches the timeline for some replacement knights and finds Arthur King, the quarterback of the New York Knights. And as the team rides the bus home, Merlin transports them all to Camelot along with their equipment manager and appoints Arthur as the acting king and the rest of the team as knights until such time as they can free the true king and his knights. Now, this doesn't bother Arthur at all. And so Arthur King and his team become King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. Not gonna lie, that was the show.
Yep.
Immediately, these 13 men say the magic words that they somehow knew. They pledge fairness to all, to protect the weak, and vanquish the evil. The magical round table then suits them up with magical armor and weapons that skips the whole, hey, do you need to know how to learn to use this? No. No, we just skip that part of the equipmenting. And they do battle with Lord Viper, who looks an awful lot like a rejected Cobra character. They mount their horses and cars. Yeah, that's correct. Cars.
Yeah.
I think we know why Camelot lost. Anyway. And using some of that good old football knowledge, they defeat a small squadron of enemies. Now, eventually in this show, which lasted 2 seasons, they'll be tasked with finding the 12 keys of truth, one for each knight. And once that's done, they will free the original knights from the Cave of Glass, and they'll get to go home. Do they get to that point? Nobody knows. The show ended after its second season, and they weren't done yet. Now, this show boasts some impressive character designs in both the Knights of Justice and the villains. I did appreciate the guy whose helmet was a battle axe. That was very neat. And, of course, the guy who rides around in a car that is actually a catapult. Also very cool. Now, magical weapons being what they are, Sir Breeze, for example, has a pike that can shoot bolts out of it.
Pow, pow.
Yeah. Every one of them has an emblem on their chest plate that gives them special abilities, such as Sir Wall, that can summon an endless supply of bricks to build walls. And some of them even have shields that can summon aid, like Arthur's shield can summon a wyvern. Well, I guess makes sense, considering the original's name was Arthur Pendragon. So, I don't have anything more to say. I did watch the first episode. The first season's on Tubi, but what do you say to this? Review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
This was done better when it was a show that took it seriously called Prince Valiant. Or it was done better when Disney remade a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court and called it A Kid in King Arthur's Court.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
What I'm saying, or it was done better when Quest for Camelot fumbled at the 1 yard line with a two-headed dragon when you had a really good, perfectly serviceable movie, and then you went and screwed it up. What I'm saying is no. I remember this show. I remember that it came on CBS Kids, at least in my market, and I remember turning away from it to another show whenever it came on. So, yeah, this is a big fat nah for me, dog.
Thank you for getting the hell out of here.
Right on. Well, thank you for that. I mean, it was fine. It was slow. It was one of those where the theme song was far more exciting than the show.
It's a very early 1990s cartoon.
Oh, yeah. It's still 80s.
Yeah.
It's an 80s cartoon that was made in the 90s.
Yeah. That's, yeah. So. Go watch Captain N.
All right. Yeah. So let's do some Trailer Park roundup here.
All right.
We got The Fall Guy. Ryan Gosling follows up being just Ken to be just a stuntman that gets involved in an off-camera action movie. It looks like a lot of fun.
I remember seeing the original series.
I didn't realize it was original series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. The movie looks fun.
Yeah.
So, The Watchers, stylistically creepy. Kind of like The Village, only better. I Saw the TV Glow. Okay, I like the indie feel and vibe of it, but not when they do the screaming that hits the limit on the mics during the intense parts. I don't like that.
The distortion.
The distortion.
Yeah.
The Strangers, Part 1. My, that's being optimistic. A planned trilogy with different victims in each one. The shower scene was particularly hard to watch. Also based on like an old series of movies. The Wild Robot, which I'm pretty sure is just the Jungle Book Robot Edition. Inside Out 2. Please don't suck. Please don't suck.
Please don't suck.
Harold and the Purple Crayon. I don't know what I just watched, and I liked precisely zero characters in the entire thing.
No.
Arcadian. Nick Cage is a survivor in some weird apocalypse world. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
Also, there's monsters. And Nick Cage! Wahoo! The Crow. Highly stylized remake. Seems to be capturing the tone of the original. Bit more blood and gore. But I could be misremembering the original. The Brendan Lee.
Yeah.
So... It's been a while since I've seen that. I think that came out in 94. Breathe. Yep. Oxygen levels on Earth have plummeted, leaving behind an orange-brown filter on all the cameras.
Mm.
So a couple of survivors with an oxygen generator are approached and threatened by the lady from Resident Evil. And instead of just killing her, like they should when somebody's threatening your child, there's a whole movie about it.
And then they kill her.
Possibly. Furiosa. Or as my spouse said, Furiosa looks really exciting and intense. Anya Taylor-Joy looks ripped and pissed off. And quite honestly, it's nice to see Chris Hemsworth as a bad guy. That works for me. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Well, all the nostalgic vibes are there.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wonder what happened to the Maitlands.
We'll find out.
Alien Romulus. It looks like an alien movie. Honestly, that's a good step one. So we'll take a bonus and the Fallout trailer. They look like they got the world right. They look like they got the humor right. Now, if they can just get the plot right.
Well, I mean, Halo looked like they got it right.
Yeah.
And then the first episode dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
The Fall Guy.
Yeah.
It ran on ABC from 81 to 86, starred Lee Majors.
Okay.
And he and other people were stunt performers who moonlighted as bounty hunters.
Nice.
Now we know.
So in MacGyver-esque fashion, they would use their stunting tricks to
do the thing.
Traps and whatever.
Nice. So I don't know if you guys have heard. It was on geekapodcast.com. Favorite website of Neil Gaiman. And
Jimmy Fallon.
And Jimmy Fallon. And a Teen Titans movie is coming.
Yes.
Yep.
So, wrong answers only. Who's going to play Robin?
Nicolas Cage.
Jaleel White.
Chris O'Donnell.
Hey!
With an earring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know.
I mean, you need it. The guy doesn't have earlobes, but he still wears an earring.
Yeah. Really short buzz cut. Mm-hmm. You know. Nipples. You know.
Which Robin are we talking about, though?
I have no idea. It'll probably be Damian. Everything's Damian now. The worst Robin.
Okay.
It could be Tim Drake. I mean, Tim Drake would be kind of amazing.
I like Tim.
You know, but it won't be.
No.
Because everything in the comics is...
Well, we know that Damian is the Robin for the Batman DCU film. So.
I know. Which, yeah. Honestly, it makes me wonder, how are they doing that when The Omen is also getting a reboot? I mean, how are they getting him in both?
Kids working overtime. I mean, Michael J. Fox did Family Ties and Back to the Future.
Yeah. Same time.
Same time. Yeah, so, you know, it's doable.
I suppose, but I would have also accepted the guy who played quote unquote Robin in The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, him.
Yeah. No, too easy.
Yeah, I suppose. So a couple other reviews before we get to the random review. Avatar The Last Airbender, the live action series on whichever
Netflix. Yeah.
I started watching it. I got one episode in and I haven't returned to it.
Oh.
It's well shot. The bending looks good, but one cannot watch it without comparing it to the original. And once that's done, the live action series reveals itself as just another pretender to the Avatar name. Now, it did get two sequels, like it's getting all
it's
three
getting the
seasons.
Whole show, yeah.
So maybe once it goes through all those and finishes the story, it'll turn it around in context. But until then, watch the cartoon. Cartoon's nearly perfect as it is.
Yeah.
It's a C. Resident Alien, come on. It is a joy to watch Alan Tudyk work. It's a good small-town comedy based on a pretty decent comic series. Some of the villains in the show drag it down a bit, but overall, give it a shot. Good B+. Then I watched Damsel. Have you seen?
No.
Millie Bobby Brown continues to impress with her roles. You know, she was Enola Holmes as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really liked her as Enola Holmes.
So here she's a noble woman who's basically she accepts a proposal in order to provide for her realm, like her dad's realm. And so she doesn't really want to, but she kind of bonds with the prince or whatnot, and she gets married, and then they go up to the mountain to do the big ceremony, like to become part of the family, in quotes. And then the prince picks her up, and he starts walking across the bridge and throws her off, where she is then having to run away from, escape, or otherwise deal with a dragon.
Okay.
It is wonderful. Watch it in the dark, because it's a lot of dark scenery, and if you watch it in the light, it robs it a lot of its details. But my God, this was a good dark fantasy movie.
What's it on?
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
And it comes very highly recommended by me anyway. Okay. I'm giving it an A. It's one of those where it's like I think it's an hour and a half, maybe a little over an hour and a half, but it doesn't squander that time. You know, so it's worth it.
Okay.
So that's what I got. It's time for
Ooh.
Yeah, Darren.
Yeah, one more thing.
I'm listening.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, have you seen Blade Trinity?
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, there was that scene where Jessica Biel's character fired an arrow right at the camera?
Right.
Right, pretty cool moment. Well, when they set up for that, the crew set up a thick layer of plexiglass to protect the camera, mm-hmm. because arrow. She needed to actually shoot it at the camera. The only spot that wasn't covered was a 2-inch by 2-inch hole so the lens could see through.
Mm-hmm.
One shot, she hit the lens. She destroyed a $300,000 camera with one shot.
Great shot, though.
It's a great shot. That's all I got.
All right. Well, in that case, Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, next month I get to review Anne Francis stars in Forbidden Planet.
Yes!
This month, however, I watched Monk Comes Down the Mountain.
Okay.
So it starts out with a guy named He Angsha. He's a simple monk living in a secluded temple. And one day he is told by the master, you need to fight all the other monks because we have a food shortage. We need to determine who's going to stay and who's going to go. And so He defeats everyone in one of those kind of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind of fight scenes, you know, where there's a lot of very suspended, mm-hmm. you know, fight scenes. And after he beats all of them, the master says, "You've beaten everyone, which means you can take care of yourself. Pack up." And upon descending from the mountain, Anksha quickly finds himself homeless in a city, and he meets Dao Ning, a doctor. Now, he meets him by stealing a chicken dinner from the guy. The guy chases him on his bike, falls into the river, and Hei has to save him from drowning. Once he saves him from drowning, the guy's like, "Okay, you've now eaten the chicken dinner, but you've saved my life. I guess I'll bring you home."
Tale as old as time.
I mean, yep. You got to respect the hustle.
And yeah, he finds Hei, you know, that night, Hei basically cleans the entire floor. He wants to be this guy's apprentice. He wants to learn medicine. So, and he works at it. He studies. And as he's doing that, Hei learns that the doctor's wife is having an affair with the doctor's little brother.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And the wife finds out that the doctor has lots of money, and she lets the little brother know that. The little brother, who makes aphrodisiacs, gives her a happy pill for the doctor, but it's really poison, which kills the doctor.
Aww.
So Hei's new master is now dead. So within a week, the little brother has now moved into the house, and they want to go out. Because they have all that money, and now it's time to go. And Hei's like, "Look, it's the seventh day of mourning. You're not supposed to go out. Just stay in. We're going to go anyway." And they get on a boat. They rent a boat out on the lake, and they don't show him doing it, but the doors of the boat are locked. And the little brother and the wife, they get into a spat. The boat springs a leak and starts to sink. But they can't get out.
Because the doors are locked.
And so we get a scene of Hei like swimming down there and looking through the windows at him and then like backing away. And because he's avenging his master.
"I don't have to save you."
You know, but now he feels guilty about it. And so he goes to the Buddhist temple to atone to it, or at least try to. And the abbot there says, "Why are you really here?" "Well, this is what I did. You know, a couple of people died, you know. So were you doing good or were you doing evil? You know, you'll need to meditate on that." So Anksha meditates for like 7 days. And when he gets done with that, he goes back to work as an apothecary, as the doctor, pharmacist kind of thing, where a man comes in named Zhao, and Zhao wants some internal medicine. "My master has challenged him to a kung fu fight, you know, to determine who's going to take over the dojo, basically. And it's his birthday, so I want to bring him some wine because we're going to fight. He might get injured, and so I want it to save him." And Hei's like, "Well, I want to go see this." So he goes and follows, and he watches Zhao and Peng, you know, fight, where Zhao wins. And so Peng's like, "So you're going to be the new leader. You know, let's go get a drink." And as Zhao leads the way, Peng stabs him in the back.
Oh,
with
no.
With a sword umbrella.
A sword umbrella? Is he the penguin?
Well, Peng Changwu.
Yes, he's the penguin.
All right. So, so now, and the reason for that is because Peng's son, you know, should be the one to inherit the dojo, as far as Peng's concerned. Mm-hmm. All right. So Anksha sees all this, but he doesn't do anything about it. You know, and then the next day, Peng's son shows up saying, "Hey, I want some wine, you know, some medicinal wine." "What for?" "Well, my father was in a fight and he was hurt. Oh, by the way, can I use your stove? He's got like an animal in a cage, a living one, and they eat it. The meat is poisoned, so they start hallucinating, and they get the idea that they're going to go rob a temple. It doesn't go well. The guy at the temple fights them, but also takes away the poison somehow in punching them so hard, they are no longer poison. Don't get it. I don't have to get it. That's the way it goes. Hay goes back to the guy that beat the snot out of him and says, I want to be your disciple. You know? Okay. Eventually, he becomes the guy's disciple. And he sweeps and he does chores and so forth. Turns out his master used to be in the same dojo as Peng. And Peng's father, when he died, didn't give Peng the secret technique, you know, the ape strike technique. He gave it instead to this new master. Zhu, because that's not confusing at all. There's a fight. Things happen. It's all well and good. Zhu beats Peng. Doesn't kill him, just beats him. And then that night, he gets shot out of the shadow. So Hay's now gone through three masters in the course of this. One of them's still alive, but he's on top of a mountain.
Yeah.
And the other two have been, one's been poisoned, the other's been shot.
Hay's kind of bad luck.
Hay is bad luck. He's convinced that it was Peng that did it. And so he goes to find his master's friend, and who is an actor, and is like, hey, this is the guy who did it. There's another big fight scene involving cops / triads. Really about here, I started to blur out. You know, there's a lot going on, and the fight scenes are really long, so it's like you just kind of
go with it.
It's like the second half of Rocky Horror Picture Show. Whatever's happening between the songs isn't really important.
Yeah.
You're really just there for the songs.
Okay.
You know. So we're going to find out. The cop gets in touch with Peng. They're going to ambush the two. There's a big fight. Peng loses again. And just as the friend is about to stab Peng, the son comes. I was like, no, I did it. I'm the one who killed your friend. And Peng then stabs himself with the friend's spear, like, I'm atoning for my son's crimes. Let my son live. And then it ends with Hay and the friend, Boss Cha, practicing the ape strike technique on a mountaintop. Okay, this is one of those movies that, despite how I'm making it sound, is frustratingly good. You know, there's not much to poke fun at without being really, really culturally insensitive. You know, because a lot of the stylistic things that we would go, well, that's weird, are that way because of Chinese theater and the way Chinese, you know, film has kind of evolved.
Yeah.
And the other one would just be because it's being nitpicky. Now, would I have liked a little bit more development of a couple relationships? Sure, but I usually would. But ultimately, it gave what it needed to give. Cinematography's great. The soundtrack's decent. The comedy at first looked like it was going to be very slapstick, but it ended up that comedy is only a tiny part of this movie. You know, the opening is comedic, and then there's a little part kind of in the middle third that's funny, but other than that, it's more of a action fantasy kind of thing. It's a solid entry in the Chinese fantasy adventure genre, and I couldn't be more disappointed than not have something funny to say about it. I recommend it to anybody who appreciates a good kung fu flick, because that's what you're going to get if you watch Monk Comes Down the Mountain.
All right.
Be like me. With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly, check out news and reviews not on the podcast on the website, geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversations. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, yada, yada, yada. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? Week 3. Head over to the YouTube channel, see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. So for Kent Harris, our Captain Kirk, decisive and bold. For Darren Wright, our Mr. Spock, logical and clear-headed. For Justin White, our Bones McCoy, the ethical and emotional heart of the podcast. I'm Chad Savage, our Montgomery Scott, the only red shirt that's safe. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.